So if you had to label yourself as an artist, would it be abstract painter? Is that enough?
I think that my art is twofold. One, it's about color. It's about color more than abstraction. Abstraction is the form, but color is the mode. And it's the place that I reside in terms of my passion. But it's also about being, I can't help it, I'm a public artist. I like big works that envelop you, that put the viewer in the work. In fact, that's what I've always loved, is when the viewer is inside my work. I want them to see it the way I feel it when I'm making it.
Listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Charlie Bennett in the virtual studio with Fred Rasko and Wendy Hagenmeyer. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called Artist in Residence 2. Our first Artist in Residence episode was back in March of 2020, part of our research for Georgia Tech's own Artist in Residence.
And after a lot more research and planning, we have one.
Our guest today is the Georgia Tech Library's first Artist in Residence, the painter and installation artist, Deanna Surlin.
We talked about her process, why she wanted to be an artist in residence at the library, and the work that she's done here, especially her installation on the ground floor of the Crossland Tower, titled Watermark.
And our songs today are about how artists build up and tear down things that show up in unexpected places and bright candy colors. One of the great things about having an artist in residence is that the artist is not confined to the traditional gallery. The gallery is anywhere that the artist is, well, residing. So let's start with a song about getting out of the gallery. This is Gallery by Eloy, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
That was Gallery by Eloy. This is Lost in the Stacks, and our interview today is with the artist Deanna Surlin, the Georgia Tech Library's first artist in residence.
So tell me about what it was in the artist in residence description for the Georgia Tech Library that caught you and made you want to come be the AIR?
Well, you know, for me, whenever I'm creating a piece of work, of a big transparent installation, I always say that the building is my silent partner. And I actually had been in Price Gilbert. Well, first of all, I've been in Price Gilbert before the renovation. And speaking of which, I think I went one day and to get coffee. and I saw those steps. And I thought, this is a terrific building. And I saw those windows. And I love the quality of light. I love the fact that students were sitting on the steps and everyone was sort of engaged in the space. And that engagement in the space already was something that was very desirable to me in terms of creating a work for a place. The other thing is my work as the process of being a painter that engages with technology, I thought that Georgia Tech is actually the perfect place to engage with the viewer, because I come to the space and the people who are interacting with it are physicists, engineers, computer designers, and people interested in and having maybe the idea of looking through something. I also think that the work is a kind of lens that changes your perception as you look through the work. You gave me the opportunity to create a work of art for the space and to engage with the community at Tech.
Is it very different from having your own studio and trying to find your way to a new work? I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I the physicality of making the work did not, it was more about the ideas and the execution and the installation rather than the physical making. The physical making had to be in a messier space.
Describe that mess. What is the messier space?
It's my studio. My studio here. There's all kinds of stuff in my studio. And I make a mess when I work. Yeah, I have to be able to make a mess. So I'll talk to you a little bit about the process of this work of art and how it gets made. Okay, so first there's a painting, and it's a gestural painting, and the painting has to do with my connection to color and to mark making and to measuring. Okay. Then I take that painting, and, you know, it's kind of a weird place where I decide that I'm going to do this, but I repurpose it by destroying it. And that destruction is important as part of the process. Then I take that painting that I've destroyed and I actually physically cut it up into pieces, because actually there's this notion of paintings within paintings that I've always loved. You always find, you know, I think everyone does it. You know, you're looking at a Holbein and there's a little hand, a little finger, and you go, wow, that's enough. It could be a great painting. Well, even as an abstract painter, I have that as well. There's a piece that you just want and you want to just cut it out and have it and hold it. So I started doing this with my paintings, sort of cutting them up, even if they were fabulous, even more so. And having that piece of the painting, be able to hold it in your hand. And then I make a new work with those pieces. And the other little kicker about that is that these new works that I make, I actually use both sides of the canvas. So the linen on the other side, like I might flip it over. And I also take other drawings and other paintings and other pieces of things of life, right? Of contemporary life. And I insert those into this new work, which is a collage. And it's a layer collage, and it's a collage that I collage on and I paint on and I draw on, and I remove things. And there's a process within that. Okay. That's step two. We're up to now there's step three. Step three is the work gets put into the computer. And I don't do this at home. Maybe at Georgia Tech we could do this, but I use a very high-end scanner to enlarge the work and make every pixel. I usually enlarge it to a factor of 30 to 50. And then That's just a technical thing that the information enters the computer. And then the next part is that I actually start to work on the file digitally. And in this case for Watermark, it was in response to 50 Years of Science Fiction. Because as someone who, you know, this was a bit new to science fiction, I mean, I haven't read a lot of science fiction. What I really noticed was how particular the color, both in terms of how it was described within the books, but also in terms of the covers and the illustrations that accompany it. And I was very engaged with this color. So I had this very, started with the painting, becomes a collage. Next stop is into the computer, manipulated in terms digitally, that I do a whole bunch of things with it to alter it, to change, to make the under skin. And then there's the layering on top of that comes from the investigation of the color palette of science fiction literature.
So, and a part of the artist in residence, the in residence part is bringing students in and doing workshops for them, right?
Yes. So one of the workshops was science fictionizing the library and in a digital format. So the students came and they were sent out to photograph the library. And then I showed them many images, actually mostly from surrealism, of kind of an altered dream space, and also science artists that had been influenced over history, who have been influenced by science fiction. And I have to say, what the students made was incredible. It was a Photoshop, because Photoshop is a great tool. And through Photoshop, in the course of, I think it was 4 hours, they made new worlds within the library, which contained, you know, floors that were made of stars and dinosaurs sitting on the deck and, whatever you can imagine, lurid color. There was actually one student who did the most incredible. He just photographed a book. Shelves. And then he took those bookshelves and he made it into kind of an Escher-like composition. And it was very interesting also because I said, do you know who Escher is? He said, you know, I haven't thought about him for years, but I actually wrote a paper about him when I was in junior high school.
That's fantastic.
And so it is. And also that, you know, Escher was 20th century, right? So it seems like a very long time ago.
We'll be back with more from Deanna Serlin, painter and Georgia Tech Library artist in residence, after a music set.
File this set under N8520.M55.
You just heard Multicolored Lights by John Strongbow, and before that, Who Do You Think You Are by the Celebrated Artists Band. Those were songs about the artist's journey of tearing down and then building up.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and we are speaking with the artist Deanna Serlin, who recently installed an artwork titled Watermark in the ground floor of the Crosland Tower at the Georgia Tech Library.
You went to the Georgia Tech Library.
Yes.
You encountered the exhibit and the collection and, you know, the science fiction stuff.
And then I did my own research, right? I didn't.
Okay. And followed that out. But that became the seed for a painting at home. Is that how you kind of took that away, or?
Yeah, I want to say a little bit. I mean, I had a certain, I've been thinking about this actually just in terms of my own process, because, you know, I know that I need to explain that this very process-oriented endeavor that I'm involved with. And why do I have to do it? Why do I have to do all that to get to there, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the first part of the painting, there is a color palette that is maybe more connected to, I'm not sure it's directly to the science fiction. I think it has to do with myself as a painter for the last 40 years. I think the science fiction comes in on the digital level and also in relationship to the space and the place. But I also want to say about color is a really important part. I mean, I'm a painter. Painting is about color. For most of us, there are painters who don't care about color, but most of it's pigment and color that gets put on a two-dimensional surface, or three, I suppose. But for me, I'm really thinking in color, and I'm thinking about this particular piece, Watermark. For me, actually, what happened was I allowed myself to delve into the colors of my childhood, which were pop art. It was the 60s. So there's magenta, and there's a particular blue, and there's a lime green. Now, this is not a new investigation for me, but it's one that I allowed myself to investigate even more so than usual. The other thing is these colors are not natural. They're in our landscape now. You know, the green line vests, the orange cones. For an artist who's involved with color, this is something very special. For me, I saw these as colors of science fiction.
So I've seen Watermark in the process of being installed, and it's quite right. Beautiful, and it's huge, and it sort of overtakes this lobby area in the library. But also, there's no there's no sort of meaning to it that I can discern that it has to do with, say, science fiction or the late 60s.
It's not that obvious. It's not that obvious. Yeah. I mean, it's a relationship. It's not a, it's not an interpretation. It's not a narrative. It's an abstract work, but the concept and the process of making it stem, I recognize my elders, so to speak.
So is it like a map of you thinking about color, or is it, does it get manipulated even farther away from the process?
A map of me thinking about color. Well, it's funny that you say map, okay, because I think of these things as maps, as plan view. I mean, when I'm making the collage, it's definitely a plan view. And sometimes I feel like when I'm placing the particular pieces that they are in reference to a walk I might be taking through a city.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yes, that's
There's
part of
it. There's a spatial component to it, yeah.
Absolutely, an absolutely plan view. You know, that you're looking down and you're moving through this space. So it's not like walking the way you normally would, right? I don't know the words. Watermark is about measuring. So that's measuring. What actually, but also, you know, all the connotations of watermark. But there's also another part of this that, you know, there's a simultaneous installation that I'm presenting in Venice, Italy. And watermark, actually, where that title comes from, is from a book by of poems. It's a long prose poem by Joseph Brodsky, who loved Venice. And it's about water levels, right? You think about fragility of climate change, which for me also the science fiction part, I should say, that as someone who came to science fiction and also my relationship with young artists who I work with in my studio. The last 15 years, I've had 2 to 4 artists, young artists work with me. They do whatever I do, but we talk all the time. We have serious conversations. And one of the things that they have informed me about is about a utopian dystopian ideology. And when I went back and read Dune, there it was, that dystopian. And what it related to very firmly was climate change. And we get back to Venice, which is the most fragile city probably on this planet. The idea of water levels and marking those levels and thinking about the Brodsky poem and all these relationships sort of meld in to the work as I'm making it.
So if someone's listening to us right now and they haven't been in the library and they haven't seen the artwork, can you describe it? Can you describe what it's made of and what it does? Because it's not just an object that you look at. It actually is sort of a manipulation of the space.
Yes, exactly. So it's actually, it's an installation. It's a transparent work that addresses, you know, I know how many windows. Sorry, 26 windows. I should know. 26 windows. You know, I think the first thing that people think about my work is color and transparent color. But it's also what I think is really important and something very beautiful that happens at Crossland is the projection of the sun through the work, which will change. It changes through the day. It will change through the seasons. And that kind of movement that I cannot control. You know, something as an artist I've learned, it's a hard thing to learn, but to relinquish control. Because I think artists are actually control freaks. I know I am. You know, I used to teach at the Atlanta College of Art, and students would say, ask why I was an artist. And I'd say, oh, you know, it's the only thing in my life I can really control. That a painting is the place where I am in control. But do you know the truth is the more you can relinquish that control, the more you're open to chance. Maybe this is a door opening, you know, a new kind of view, a new kind of process that, you know, I'm embracing.
You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with more from the artist Deanna Serlin on the left side of the hour.
Hi, I'm John Lindemann from the Watson Library at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Museum of Obsolete Library Science. And you're listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta. More wattage in the cottage. Tune it in and tear the knob off.
Today's show is called Artist in Residence 2. And when I was cutting this interview, I kept hearing Deanna say, I'm talking too much. You're going to cut this out, right? And I cut some of it out, but some of it I wanted to save. Here's one of those bits. You've been the artist in residence at a number of places, right?
Yes, but it means something different. Okay, so so for instance, when you're my first artist in residency was at Yaddo, which is in Saratoga Springs, and it's a very old and wonderful residency. And basically, it's an opportunity for artists, writers, poets, and composers to have time just to work. And you're taken care of like a child. Your food is made for you. No, I'm serious. You sit in a grand dining room. It's actually the Yaddo was endowed by the Trask family, who owned the Pennsylvania Railroad. And it was their summer home. And they left all their fortune to this artist residency. That's a longer story. We could just have a podcast about that. However, that was a real gift to me when I, early in my career, I actually did that residency for 9 weeks in 1983. No, maybe earlier. And it was a huge gift, and it's a gift of time. I mean, you, in fact, that is what most residencies are for, but it's also about a community. So it's a community of artists that come together, live together, work on their own stuff, and then have dialogue with each other if they want to. And I think that's true at Tech too. So, okay, you didn't treat me like a child and you didn't take care of me in the sense of preparing my breakfast. But you gave me the opportunity to create a work of art for the space and to engage with the community at Tech.
File this set under QC1.U52.
You just heard Goody Goody Gumdrops by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
What is happening?
Some bubblegum pop for you. Love it. And before that, Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows by Leslie Gore. And we started off with Cotton Candy by the Silvers. Songs that use bright, shiny, colorful candy to evoke an enthusiastic, emotional response.
Once again, Fred, too much fun.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and our show today is called Artist in Residence 2. The Georgia Tech Library has been working on an artist-in-residence program, and our inaugural artist is Deanna Serlin.
Can you describe why you needed to move away from a single canvas and get to this process that you talked about, the destruction and then the remediation? Was painting not enough? Did you want to complicate it? Were you seeking, how can you describe that process?
So first of all, one of the things that is intrinsic to who I am as an artist is that I'm a public artist. For the last 22 years, I've been making large-scale public works that cover sides of buildings everywhere from Atlanta to Venice to Germany to Turkey. So that's part of something I like to do. Why do I like to do it? How did it start? So I will say that actually my first public artwork was probably, I'm going to say the date, was 1981. And in Ithaca, New York, I was invited to wrap 12 columns on the main, it was called the Commons, it still is, with large-scale paintings. And I wrapped these big paintings that were layers of color. Little did I know I returned to this idea 40 years later. The second place I want to reference in terms of my thought process was actually at Georgia Tech in 1996. There, the county, the Arts Council for the county of Fulton County, sent me a request to make art in odd places for the Olympics. And I have to tell you, when I first read the call, I threw it away because I said, I'm not, because I think they said something like painting on dumpsters or whatever. I'm like, I'm not painting on dumpsters. But what happened was I was driving and Georgia Tech just got their new light board, and it was the first light board in the city of Atlanta, and it was sitting right over 7585, which it still is, although that's not the light board that is there now. That one from 96 was a much cruder light board. And somehow I got this idea that I wanted to put my paintings up there because everyone would be stuck in traffic and would have to see my painting, have be entertained, have something to look at.
That's the most Atlanta art statement I've ever heard.
Except what happened, I'll tell you, Charlie, what's funny is that, yes, this all worked out. I made the proposal. Georgia Tech Athletics, who were who owned that light board, were very delighted to do this with me. They gave me a graduate student. I was totally undigital at this point, okay? I had to be taught to use the mouse. That light board also originally was a – when I got to the room where they programmed the events, I guess you could say, the pages, it was a Commodore computer on the outside, and I was told it was totally jerry-rigged on the inside.
Oh, boy.
And you had to program it one bulb at a time. So you could choose the colors and the sequence and how to, you know, there was no scanning in, there was no, it was, but, you know, you have to remember also, I didn't even know how to use a mouse. So the graduate student had to teach me how to use the mouse, which is really, he had a great time, I think. He probably thought, this is crazy. But we did it, and we had seven images. Now, the irony of all this is that during the Olympics, the traffic wasn't bad at all because everyone was afraid to drive. Everyone took public transportation. But and if you drove, you just drove right through. But so many people saw that, and I think they saw it, and they didn't know that they saw it. Is that a strange thing to say?
No, it makes sense.
Yeah. Would tell it's me, part oh, of the landscape. I know your work. Yeah. And I kind of, but I love the whole thing, you know, this light board. Okay. So the next time, was a work for a library. It was commissioned by Fulton County to do a work for a library. And it was very particular work called Looking Forward, Looking Back. And it was for a particular community about change. And I made these, I think there was 10 large-scale glass panels that were tinted with a laminate that actually had to be poured through. They don't do this anymore. And silkscreened and etched with a text. And then the text was actually etched around the library. And it was it's a very beautiful work. The colors that I chose were ambers and purples and blues. But when I was finished and it was so well received, I looked at it and I said, but you know, that's not painting. That's not my painting. And I said, what a shame that I made it so much for this place and not for this library and not really making a work of art. And then I had this opportunity to create a work of art for the High Museum, and that's Retracings. And that's my first large-scale site transparent work. And it's a pivotal work, and it's a very large work. It's the size is 60 feet by 90 feet. And it fit on all the windows of the Meyer Building of the High Museum that faced Peachtree Street. And I also had to invent new software or mixed software. Now, you're talking to a person who didn't even own a computer. In 2000, I didn't own a computer yet. I had to borrow my spouse's. So when I wanted to send an email, which I never did, and I actually wrote... I didn't. Well, most people had computers by 2000. I'm a painter. Why would I have a computer? So I actually created the proposal for that that work at Kinko's using their color mm-hmm. Xerox machine and cutting and pasting making these proposal images. But two things happened. One, it was also about that painting had to get into the real space, that it had to get off the wall and into the space of the world. But also, conversely, when I did tests and I put these transparencies on the windows at the high, I looked through them and saw Peachtree Street and people and cars and clouds moving. And that moment is where I left the landscape, because the landscape was the real world. And it was the work engaging with the real world. So one of the joys about Watermark is you can look at the work and you can see people moving through it, climbing up the rest of the hill to Cherry Street. You know, you could have seen the person walking up the hill without the transparency, without the artwork. But I think that looking through the artwork, like a lens that tints and alters your perception of the world, is what I love.
Our guest today is Deanna Serlin, the painter, installation artist, and the first artist in residence at the Georgia Tech Library. You can learn more about her and her work at her website, deannaserlin.com. That's deannaserlin.com.
And you can file this set under N6494.I56W67.
You just heard Out of Place by No Vacation, and before that, Rats and Monkeys by Art Bears. Those were songs about things that show up where they're not necessarily expected.
Our show today is called Artist in Residence 2, featuring an interview with the Georgia Tech Library's first artist in residence, Deanna Serlin.
Serlin's piece, Watermark, was installed in the Crosland Tower last month, and she will be giving an artist talk at the library on Wednesday, April 13th. Reception begins at 5:30 p.m., talk at 6:30.
You can learn more about the event and the workshop Serlin is running at the library by visiting library.gatech.edu/events.
In fact, you can find out about all the library art initiatives by going to library.gatech.edu/library-arts.
I wonder if we have a website for the credit roll, too. Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, written and produced by Charlie Bennett, Fred Rasko, Marley Givens, and Wendy Hagenmeyer.
Today's show was edited and assembled by Charlie, that's you, and then disassembled, and then assembled again, with some pieces in different places.
Legal counsel and a framed print of Rose and Vine by Joan Snyder were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, Phillips got good taste. Special thanks to Deanna for being on the show, to Catherine Mancy and the whole Artist in Residence team at the Georgia Tech Library. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast pretty much anywhere you get your audio fix.
Next week's show is called... Wait, Fred, is this correct?
Title on your script there, that's just a placeholder. I think what we're going to talk about is syndication in scholarly publishing platforms.
No, I like the placeholder better. Next week's show is called Scholarly Publishing Supercontinents, and I am looking forward to finding out what that means and saying it correctly.
Boy, me too. All right, time for our last song today. And if on a fine sunny day such as this, you wander into the Georgia Tech Library and find yourself bathed in the warm glow of candy-colored filtered sunlight, take a moment to appreciate how a resident artist can improve any space with a little creativity and a generous application of dynamic and radiant color. So let's close today with Radiant Color by Moon Revenge right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great candy-colored weekend, everyone.